Get what you missed on Ruined It's for breakfast on the catch up. For Adelaide Tools, selling tools, not toys. With 5 locations, Paraka, Lonsdale, St Mary's, Mile End and Gawler. AdelaideTools.com.au. Triple M.
Oh, g'day, Roo. Since I spoke to you yesterday, you haven't lost any kids? You haven't left any anywhere? Or
No. Found one.
Kept all six together.
No,
fantastic.
All good. Yeah, no, I've really picked up my game.
Oh, good. We should explain yesterday. Roo told us that he went to an open inspection on the weekend
and
left one behind.
Yeah, thanks for telling everyone. My mum was very proud of me when she found out. It's very good for you to let that out of the bag. I was trying to keep that.
Might be a story for another day. The funny things that happen at open inspections. Because you hear some great... Your brother's a real estate agent.
Yeah.
He has some good stories.
No, he did ring me and remind me of something he might have done yesterday. We might get to that a little bit later in the show.
Righto.
I think.
Now, Roo, I'm a little bit confused. This is going to take some explaining for me today, but I reckon I speak for a lot of South Australians. We wanted something to happen, and now our Premier has announced what he's going to do with our power, but I'm still a bit confused. Yeah. I need it explained.
It's not straightforward, but we've got him coming on later on to tell us all about his plan to solve the power crisis in the state.
Right. Two easy, simple questions for us to ask. Is it going to cost me as the householder more? And will it stop blackouts? That'd be two questions.
Yep. I think he'll say it won't cost you more and it will stop the blackout.
I hope it doesn't cost more because they're spending 500 odd million.
When I say that's not going to cost you more, we're all going to pay for the 550 million.
Are we?
But you're not going to have to take it out of your wallet.
Right.
Just going to come out of the state budget.
Out of the coffers. All right. Yeah. Well, Jay Weatherall will join us a little bit later on. Hey, Big Mal will join us as well. We'll see what he's got to say about it.
He's been living in Adelaide a little bit.
Doing a sweeping tour of Adelaide. Yes, he is indeed. What else is happening, Roo?
The Coopers crew are in a bit of damage control as well. They've tried to have a bit of a laugh with a few slogans from the Bible, I think, on their beer cans. Mm. And as usual, there's always a part of the community that don't like... when you're a bit edgy, and they've probably gone over the line, perhaps. I don't know. They put an apology out. We'll delve into that a little bit later on as well.
Thou shalt drink beer. That's one of the commandments.
Oh, that's nothing wrong with that.
No, exactly.
I don't think that's what they got in trouble for.
No, all right. We'll find out more about that a little bit later on. All thanks to Adelaide Tools this morning. It's Ruined Dits for Breakfast.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
Ruined It's for Breakfast. Roo, making news right around the world at the moment. Now, we are going to talk about power today, and I know we've been going on for months and months about this, but it's reaching a critical stage. I just want to point something out to you, Roo. I wasn't aware of this, but people in business use this. A fella showed me an app last night. It's a live app.
Yep.
And at any stage, he can go onto this app and find out what we're paying live at that point in time for power.
Yep.
Now, I don't quite understand this, but all I know is these numbers don't stack up for me. Now, this is per megawatt hour.
Yep.
This is at the time last night. It was about 7:30. He said, look at this.
Just a random time.
Random time.
This is not a highlighted point. This is just a standard
But this gives
time.
You an example of what's going on around Australia. Yep. So per megawatt hour, at this point in time, we clicked on it. Queensland was paying $75.37. Yep. New South Wales, $69.95. Victoria, $70.48. Tasmania, $79.95. Mm. And wait for it, South Australia, $124.99. Mm. Now, I don't even understand what that means. All I know is $129 is a lot more than $75.37.
And that shows why our power bills are twice as dear as most states.
Now, that is unexplainable.
You know what? It actually gets over $1,000 at some points.
That's unexplainable.
And the problem is that you pay on the highest point, the most expensive point.
Yep.
Some people pay average of that or a reflection of that. So that's where the issues are. You got to take your peaks out of your usage.
Now, one reason I raise this is that yesterday, in fact, I'm going to play this grab. Now, we've got this Josh Frydenberg, right, who's the Federal Energy Minister. Let's hear from him.
We are seeking advice on whether the decision today by South Australia to go it alone is in breach of the National Electricity Market rules, which obviously has kept the system together for the last 20 years.
Now, what he went on to say was, Roo, that he said, by South Australia doing this, the rest of the nation will pay more for their power. So he's happy for us right now to pay, in some cases, double. So it's okay for South Australia to pay double. Mm. But as soon as we try to do something about it, he comes out and says, oh, hang on, the rest of the nation will have to pay more. Well, what do you know, Josh? We're paying a heck of a lot more right now, but you think that's okay?
Yeah, well, I guess he's trying to protect Liberals' interest again, and it's Liberal v Labor. That's what that politics that is, isn't it, Ditz, when he's saying stuff like that. But he'd be saying that's our fault that we're paying more.
He did actually say that.
And if you're in an agreement, do you want people to stay in the agreement or pull out?
But we're only pulling out now. We're pulling out now. But this is a question we need to ask Jay Weatherill.
That's right. And I'm not smart enough to know either way either, but obviously it's National Liberal Party v
State Labor,
and they're just attacking each other hard. But look, that's what you've shown is this is the problem.
It's actually outrageous.
We're just paying too much for power, and we all know that, and that's why we're talking about it, and that's why we're going to get Weatherill on, because we need to sort it out ASAP. I'll tell you what, the pictures they're producing over, they need Les Burdett to go to India.
Oh, what about this story?
They have just produced a pitch that I don't know how to describe.
It's already got big cracks in it before we even...
It looks like a bloody... down on the riverbank after the flood's gone down. It looks like you wouldn't even let your kids play with a tennis ball on it.
Well, the other funny thing is Steve Smith's gone out to have a look at it. Now, bear in mind, this fella's the captain of of Australia. I think he's within his rights.
No flash photography.
So he gets his phone out and thinks, I've got to take a photo of this. He thought it was comical. They stopped him. They stood in front of him and said, no photos, please. Now, this is the captain of the Australian team.
What the hell is taking a photo of a pitch going to do it?
Well, they're trying to hide it, obviously. Yeah. They don't want anyone to see it.
Pretty sure they're going to see it pretty soon when the first delivery's bowled.
Yeah.
So that was weird. They had a go at Steve Smith for cheating, and, you know, he obviously did the wrong thing when he tried to see if he should appeal his LBW. But doctoring pitches, where does that fall? What category does that fall into? Are you allowed to tell your groundsman what pitch to? I know it's been happening probably forever, but surely there's a boundary of how much you can prepare a pitch for your home team.
Now, good question. So I asked a former test opening batsman this very question about a week ago after what had happened with the previous two pitches. Remember, because you showed me that article after the second test, the fella came out and said, I was forced to make the pitch this way.
Yeah, they scrubbed it up with bloody wire brushes and all sorts, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. He said, I was told to water half of the pitch.
So that's not preparing a pitch, that's doctoring a pitch.
Do you know, I don't think there are any law. Look, there must be a law that says prepare a fair, fair pitch for both sides. But it turns out no one knows who. In fact, we should ring Les Burdett about this. Who has the final say? Does the curator or does the cricket association in that town, like, you know, the Sacker at the Adelaide Oval, for example, would they go to a Les Burdett at the time, or now it's Darren Hoff, isn't it, and say, Hoffy, this is how the pitch, or does Hoff say, no, hang on, I'm preparing a fair cricket wicket. Who does have that final say?
I reckon if you live in Australia, it'd be listening to Mr. Australia, wouldn't you? Whatever they need. If they need spinners, if they got Warney.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think you go out in Australia and prepare the wicket to make it an even contest. So I'd like to think that's...
Yeah, well, I think we have, actually, because our pitches are always the same in every state.
Yeah, like, we always know what you're going to get.
You get swing in Brisbane, you get bounce in the Gabba, you get pretty flat here.
Batting wicket in Adelaide.
Sydney.
You're right. It's very predictable.
It's all pretty predictable here.
Hey, just finally, Roo, the funniest story I've come across in a long, long time. Well, this amused me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Saudi Arabia. We know the politics of Saudi Arabia, and we know the religion of that country. I don't want to knock them for that. That's their want, their desire.
What is it? Tell me.
Well, it's a Muslim country, but a very, very strict Muslim country. Probably the strictest, most radical with their rules. Governing women, for example, wearing burqas and those sorts of things. There's no alcohol in the whole place.
Yep.
Whereas you could go to Dubai, which is a Muslim state as well, and you can still buy a drink. So what I'm saying is Saudi Arabia, they take it to the extreme.
Yep.
However, they've relaxed things in the last week or so, and this has been a long time in the planning. They've announced a women's council.
A women's council?
Women's council.
For what?
To empower women, right? So right. I read the headline. I went, good on you. This is fantastic.
So they're taking a step forward?
Yeah. Now, on this council... it's made up of 13 men. So I've just clicked on
so
it.
So they have to ask what their wife before they come to the meeting? What do you want brought up today?
So this great headline about new women's council to empower women, moving forward, and there are no women on it. It's all men, and they're going to make the decisions because clearly women can't
make. They're not capable.
They're not capable.
Gee whiz.
And I read further, and at this conference, again, hundreds turned up at this conference, women were allowed to watch from another room via a video link. But they weren't allowed in the same room because that's against
the... And they weren't allowed to talk?
Not allowed to talk. Can't have a say. But there is, at least there's now a women's council in Saudi Arabia. And if you think I'm making this up, I Googled this online this morning.
How does it go as a country, Saudi Arabia?
Oh, well, it's the richest nation in the world.
Yeah, but what? Because they got oil.
Yeah.
Right.
That helps. They control the world's oil.
The only thing.
Yeah.
We'll keep an eye on that, see how that committee goes.
Yeah.
See if it's got a future.
It's got legs in it. That's what's making news around the world.
I only have time for one breakfast show.
Ruin Dits for breakfast.
The Governor-General has accepted my advice.
The Prime Minister, Malcolm Big Mal Turnbull.
Oh, gee, Ruin, it's been a very, very highly strung political show this morning, hasn't it?
Has it ever, but let's get the big man on himself. He might be able to sort out whether it's Josh Frydenberg or Jay Weatherall.
Yes.
Big Mal will make sense of what we need to know.
Big Mal, good morning. What do you think of our SA power plan?
Well, I've got to say, I like the South Australian initiative. It's an exciting time to be alive. But Jay Weatherall was walking around. I mean, really and truly, he makes me laugh. He was carrying that like a kid's project last night. Done the cover sheet. Put a bit of glue on there. He sprinkled some glitter on there. And he was very proud of himself.
So he's put his name on all these books.
Where did he get the glitter from?
That's right. He got the glitter from the Fringe Festival Club. Probably scraped some of it off Lawrence Mooney's face last Friday. But, I mean, really, I'm going to get the biggest battery in the world. Is he going to pop down a Kmart and get a couple of Energizers? when he says battery, he makes me laugh. What? Listen, mate, just let's get back to making fuel and power the old-fashioned way, burning fossil fuels. Coal is our friend. These gas-fired power stations. Where is he? Is he going to get the bottle from the local BP?
On the run.
Jay, you've got to laugh at him, don't you? He's a very excitable young man. He was walking around with half a mongrel in his pants yesterday. At the idea of gaining power. I don't want to tread all over his dreams, of course, but I think it's highly illegal, and we're going to throw him in the can.
Hey, did you enjoy the finale of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here?
Absolutely, I did, Drew. I'd like to see you and Ditz in the jungle next year, too. Casey Donovan is a worthy winner of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And good on her. She did win Oz Idol in 2004. Do you remember the song that she won with?
No, what was it?
Exactly.
No one can remember, Drew.
I think he was leading us into that.
I think it was Listen With Your Heart. I prefer Roxette's Listen With My Heart. But anyway... With a reality TV win every 13 years, she'll probably take out the 2030 edition of The Block.
That's right. She's wonder becoming an expert at it, yeah.
Wonder what they'll be building in 2030. Yurts for Generation Y. She'll win about not getting enough smashed avocado at home. Or maybe she'll be on MKR 2030. I mean, how thin and weird will Pete Evans be by then? We're living on a solid diet of camel urine and maggots by then. Little Petey Evans.
Yeah, he's going to have a show. He's going to come up with a show, What You Put In Your Bullet and Drink Every Morning or something like that.
What you put in your bullet is your business.
Hey, let's move on. Now, we asked you, we've been asking you for several weeks about the elections over in WA, and it just, it didn't turn out very good for your mob, did it?
Well, it's a debacle for WA. They voted for a Labor government. So they've got a bunch of communists now that will tear the wealth off them and tell them how to behave themselves, what time to get into bed and how much to drink. But, of course, we did a deal with One Nation, and that was a toxic relationship. And essentially, you end up having to have a look at their policies. I mean, they're anti-vaxxers. I can remember a time, Rowan Ditz, when polio was very popular in this country. Mm. There was the limping kids and calipers everywhere. Do we want to go back there?
No.
And why are we judging people based on their religion? I remember a time when the angriest we got was when a bunch of Hare Krishnas would get their dance on in town on a Friday night. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Friday night shoppers, and you go, piss off your Hare mongrels and have a bit of a laugh with them, and then go down to Cross Keys and have a $3 fee. Little Tubbs Barnett didn't stand a chance, really. I think you're pushing it uphill when you look and sound like a ventriloquist's dummy. So, anyway, he'll go where all retirees go, off to Bunnings to start telling people where to go and turning sausages onto sausages. Well, good on your Barney. Nobody really cares what happens in WA. May as well be Siberia.
Now, before you leave us, who are you rocking this morning?
Well, I'm rocking. Well, Triple M is rocking Port Augusta.
Yeah. Home of coal-fired power stations.
Good on you, Big Mal.
Throw another coal on the Barbie. Good on you,
there, Big Mal.
Hey, that's why we're in such good shape, because he's running the country.
Exactly.
Triple M.
104.7 Adelaide's Triple M, Roo and Ditts for breakfast. Roo, a huge announcement yesterday by our Premier and our government here in South Australia. $550 million spend to try and right our electricity situation.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to work. And one man who's going to hope it works more than anyone is Jay Weatherill, and he joins us now. The Premier, good morning, Jay.
Morning, fellas.
Two easy questions to start with, I think. I won't say easy, two obvious ones to start with. Will we pay less for our power? Will we have blackouts if you implement this?
That's what it's all about. It's about reducing power prices and making a more reliable system. So the way we're going to do that is to take charge of our energy future, being more self-sufficient. So rather than relying upon coal-fired power coming over the Victorian border, we'll actually generate our own. So create our own here in South Australia and secure our own supplies here in South Australia.
How does that happen? Tell me how we're going to create the power and how it's going to be cheaper.
Yeah, three main ways. Battery, so we'll have the nation's largest battery. So during the night when the wind's blowing, we can actually store that energy when we're not using much of it. And then when we wake up in the morning and switch on the various appliances, it will be there ready to use. So that battery storage will increase our capacity to take our renewable energy and use it at times of the day when we need it. The other is a new gas-fired power station, so we want the latest and most effective gas-fired power station that's continuously running, protecting us and giving us stability, but also when there are peak demands, like on these 46-degree days, we can just crank it up so that we don't have to worry about load shedding.
So did you say that'll be continuously running, the gas-fired power station? It is
absolutely.
It? Okay. I thought it was written up in the advertiser today, like you're only going to use it when you needed it.
Well, what's going to happen is that it always will be needed for stability, because if you have lots of renewables in your system, you also need something which provides stability in the system. So that spinning reserve gives you the stability. Every now and then you'll need to crank it up to actually start generating actual electricity. So it plays a number of different roles. So if something bad happens, say a generator falls over or something, or there's a massive weather event, it can actually kick in. Or say we know we're going to have a 46-degree day and we've just run out of reserves in the state, we can also schedule it to operate on those occasions. So it'll be sitting there as a backup, but it will also be continuously working.
Premier, what about yesterday? The Federal Minister, Josh Frydenberg, came out. He was very up in arms, if you like. He was very animated and said that South Australia is breaking an agreement or is in breach of the agreement, and that they're looking into whether they take action or not. How do you respond to that?
Well, we're taking assertive action to stand up for South Australia, and their first instinct is to call on the lawyers to actually criticise it. I mean, it's a nonsense. We already have powers to intervene in an emergency. All we're doing is making it easier for us to intervene. So at the moment, I've got to get a cabinet meeting together, go off and see the governor, declare an emergency, and then my energy minister can direct the market. I'm just cutting through all that red tape and giving Tom the capacity to intervene. Look, on February the 8th this year, what happened is that this national energy market, the one that Mr. Frydenberg is so fond of, chose to black out South Australians rather than turn on Pelican Point, a power station that was just sitting there. That's utterly unacceptable. It didn't need to happen. And I'm not going to have South Australians at the mercy of some boffin sitting over in the eastern states who don't give a bugger about South Australia.
Tell us about how the battery storage works, because it felt like it's sort of, this has come out of nowhere a little bit. Tell us about how that works and how much it can store, and if you used the battery only, for instance, how many hours of storage would you be able to get out of it?
So we're after a 100 megawatt battery, and that would provide us, when fully discharged, 100 megawatts for an hour. That would be the nation's, and some say the world's largest battery. That is a one thumping big battery.
But how many hours would that give? Sorry, Jay, if
an hour.
You'd get an hour out of it. Okay.
Yeah. Now, 100 is about what the shortfall was in this Pelican Point incident back in in the 8th of February. So 100 is a big deal.
So do you use the – just sorry to jump in. So does every day you just recharge this battery? Do you use it every day or do you only use it in the emergency?
We take it over and use it. In the meantime, it would just be used and played into the market as another generator. So it would fit in when it was needed to. It would be run by an operator to actually make money out of it. So that's why it wouldn't cost as much as it would otherwise cost. But we would take control of it. The state government, we knew a hot wet day was coming up. We'd want to take control of it the day before so that it was fully charged, it wasn't being used, so that we could play it in when we needed to.
But when we get plenty of power from the wind and solar, you're saying it'd go into the battery, we'd store it, and any excess we'd store it, and then we'd actually use it and sell it and make money out of this battery storage. Is that what you're saying?
Because, because when the sun shines and the wind blows, it doesn't always match up with the period of high demand. So, often you'll see times of the day where we're almost in the negative prices because there's so much energy, it's just discharged and nobody knows what to do with it. With a battery, you can store it and then take it out when you need it. So that's the essence of a battery. And this was used in California when they had a massive issue. One of their gas-fired generators went down and a big battery was put in place there. So it is working around the world, but it's pretty cutting-edge technology. We want to bring it to South Australia because we want to be a leader in renewable energy. And this is where the clean jobs of the future are. A high-tech future for South Australia is what I think most people want. But they also want stable supply and they want to see the prices lower.
To the average person out there, and we're all average people, that just we have to pay our bills weekly. From an economic point of view, we know that the hospital here has had a lot of adverse publicity in recent years, and we're told that the day it opens, it's going to cost us a heck of a lot of money. Now the front page today tells us another $550 million to fix up our power source. Can the state sustain all of this?
Absolutely. When we've got reserves because we've actually been prudent how we managed our finances. So we've got about $1.2 billion worth of surpluses. That is, we've spent less money than we've brought in. That money's there for just something like this. I mean, this could not be the highest priority. We've got to keep the lights on.
Yep.
We've got to make sure that we warrant to the rest of the world that this is a place where you can actually invest with certainty and you're not going to be murdered by these large power companies. I mean, look, people are absolutely sick to the back teeth of large power companies screwing us. And the problem is the reason why they're screwing us is there's a few of them and they know they can screw us because electricity is an essential service and they know they've got us over a barrel.
So in essence, is this getting us away from private ownership? Is it doing that or not?
It is to some degree. This is the first time since the privatisation of ETSA in 1999 that the government has invested in generation. So it's a big deal. It is accepting that the privatisation by the lips was a mistake and that we're getting back in to control our energy future. And, I don't think there's anything more important than keeping the lights on and actually warranting to the world that you can invest here and you'll have a secure and stable future. And that's what people want me to do. They want me to step up. And that's what we're doing.
Jay, what's going to happen when the coal plant in Victoria shuts down in March at Hazelwood? What's going to happen to our prices, do you think?
Our prices probably won't be greatly affected. It will have a big effect on Victorian prices, and indeed they're already getting very close to ours. So New South Wales and Queensland have just soared past us in terms of future electricity prices. So we're now third on the list instead of being top of the pops.
And we'll have enough gas to run the gas plant. There's a bit of talk that there's not enough gas in Australia coming up.
Yeah, we've got sufficient gas for this. It actually requires pretty modest amounts of gas, and there are sufficient gas reserves in South Australia. But this plan also incentivises more gas exploration. So we've got plenty of gas in South Australia. It's a question of getting at it. This provides another $24 million to actually explore for gas. And we'll get first call on that gas. So any gas that is discovered as a consequence of this exploration, we've put a clause in the grant, which means that the South Australian government gets first dibs on it and it can be put into local energy generation. We're also giving landowners 10% of the royalties so they can make $300,000 if they've got a gas well on their property, and we think that'll unlock a lot of extra exploration.
Mm. Premier, this all sounds fantastic, and I applaud you for doing something about it, and I'm sure most South Australians do, because we're sick and tired of the situation. Have we waited too long, though? Some people are suggesting that maybe we could have acted a lot sooner.
Well, we have been trying to get reform of the national electricity market. I mean, that's what should happen. It's a national electricity market. We don't own any of it. It's owned by private sector companies. But enough is enough. I mean, look, the straw that broke the camel's back for me was February the 8th, when South Australians were blacked out, three times as many as necessary, we heard later.
Mm-hmm. But,
you know, we had 90,000 South Australians blacked out instead of turning on a gas-fired power station, one of the most efficient in the nation, sitting there idle. And we have great suspicions that this was all about money and not about people. Because what happens is, if that power station had been turned on, it would have lowered the price for that company's other unit. Now, we can't have a situation where profits are being put before people, and especially when it's causing the massive reputational damage. I mean, we cannot have a situation where we black out again. And I can't guarantee, you know, a tree won't fall on a power line, but I can make sure that we control our own energy future.
Fair enough. Premier Jay Weatherall, thanks so much for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks, fellas.
Roo, just one final comment, and I didn't want to say this at the time because otherwise we'll get into this massive, massive political debate or argument, but every time someone says, and I'm not picking sides here, but we've got to be balanced, every time someone says, oh, the Libs sold it and privatised it back then, there was a reason for that, which I think we all remember quite well, is that under the Labor government, the whole state went broke and they actually had to sell off part of the farm.
Yep.
There were reasons why we privatised things. I think just to be fair and balanced, we need to point that out as well. Yeah. I think if we remember
and
the state
speaking,
bank going broke.
And better when they are owned by private companies.
Some would say that, yes.
Yep.
Ruined It's for Breakfast on 104.7 Triple M.
7.43, Ruined It's for Breakfast. All thanks to Adelaide Tools, Roo. Five great locations. They got all the big names in tools as well at the lowest possible prices every day.
Sure have.
Yeah. Now, Roo, you had a little mishap on the weekend.
Which you
shared with us yesterday.
A little one.
Quite funny.
I shared, did I?
Well, we all shared, all right.
No, you shared.
So tell us what happened.
Well, I was up looking at a house up near your place, which is probably the first mistake.
You've got to be kidding. You're not shifting up there.
Yeah, well, just on the other side of Harndorf. And got up there and was all excited, you know, go for a drive with the family, have a look at a house, move up to the hills for a tree change. First one I've sort of been keen on for a while. I got up there, got the brochure and had a look around and, yeah, this is good. All the kids are loving it. The wife's happy. I thought, gee, this is good. Had a look for about 20 minutes, had a look around and then went back in to ask a couple of questions to the real estate agent and she sort of politely told me that it's pretty much sold already.
A bit deflating.
And I thought, oh, you're kidding. I've just driven half an hour up here and fallen in love with it and all of that. So needless to say, I got pretty angry pretty quick, sort of lost it internally, had a bit of steam coming out the ears.
Spat the dummy.
And spat the dummy and said to the wife, get in the car, let's get the kids, let's get out of here and let's go. And there was, you know, a bit of tension in the air, fair to say.
Right.
And we got in quick, and I really wasn't looking to see who was in and who wasn't. So we drove off out the property, and then I just thought, nah, I'm going to have another look. I'm going to drive around again and have another look. And so we drove back around, and as we were driving back around, one of our children started running over to the car, bawling her eyes.
What about me?
Yeah. So we were just about, if I hadn't gone back in for another look, we would have drove off without our second daughter.
So Rosie?
Young Rosie, five-year-old.
Five-year-old Rosie.
Yeah, she was a bit distraught that she nearly was left at Arndorf.
Gee.
And she didn't know where to come to your joint.
Come on, Rosie, what were you thinking?
Yeah, come
Fancy
on,
being distraught.
Yeah, so
Mum and Dad had just abandoned you.
Nearly left a kid in the Adelaide Hills.
Now the funny thing is as well, your two boys were sitting in the back and they didn't notice that Rosie wasn't in the middle of them.
That's right. They probably did, but probably didn't care. Probably were happy that they had a bit more space.
Put your foot down, Dad.
Keep going, Dad, everything's good back here. So that was a bit of we're looking back and laughing on it now, but we're a bit horrified of being bad parents and what could have been if we took off and you know. someone flogged her or she stayed up there or whatever.
This is similar, and I want to say a very good morning to my sister-in-law, Celia. That's all I'll say. I won't name the rest of her family, but they went on a, they did the big, big, big overseas trip just before Christmas,
right?
Three kids. And this is before they've even left, and they're going to the United States. Never been before. Very, very excited.
That is a big trip.
Very excited. Celia didn't even get out of the Adelaide airport before she lost it with the kids. And with one of them, she looked at him and ripped up his boarding pass and threw it in the bin and said, you're not coming. Now, that's pretty big, isn't
it? Yeah, it is
and this,
big.
And this boy stood there looking at her going, are you serious?
Yeah, there's a bit of
tension. So he nearly got left in Adelaide before he even left.
Gary Lyon told a story a couple of years ago about him. I think he was overseas somewhere. Don't quote me where, maybe Italy or America or something like that. And his kid was left on a train, all right? This is true, and went and got off and missed him for, I think the lad had a mobile phone and rang his uncle back in Australia or something. It was full on.
You're kidding.
It would have been horrible and your heart would have been pounding.
Yeah.
But it does happen out there. Absolutely. Mm. People do lose their kids. Make me feel better, please. Please, someone back me up.
You need
here.
A bit of support here, don't you? 133353, where have you lost your kids?
Yeah. It must happen, surely. Yeah. I can't be the only one.
Give us a ring. 133353, help Roo out here. Where did you lose your kids?
104.7 Triple M.
Oh, as most people know, Roo's got six kids, he and Sarah, but on the weekend they were down to five. Mm. So he left one behind. Went to an open inspection.
Only
left
for a couple of minutes.
Left one behind.
Let's go to Tea Tree Gully. Leah, have you left a kid behind?
I have twice.
Oh, right, eh?
Well, you're good at it, are you?
Same kid too. She's probably got a bit of a complex.
Oh.
So what happened, Leah?
Well, we were heading up the river up to Morgan, actually, to go skiing, and we all stopped at Kapunda for a toilet break. And I was sitting in the front reading a book, so I wasn't paying much attention. And we all climbed back in, and we had just got back out of the town, and luckily her brother said, where's Emma? Turned around, went back, and there she is standing out the front of the toilet block with her arms folded.
How old was she?
She was about 8 or 9.
Ooh.
And she took it okay, did she?
She was pretty good about it, actually. I was panicking, but she was actually pretty good.
I suppose a couple of days later you would have come back from Morgan and gone past that pub. You would have seen her eventually, wouldn't you?
We're only going up for the day.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you would have spotted her. No worries. Thanks, Leah. All right,
let's go to Hazelwood Park. G'day, Rob.
G'day, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah, good.
What did you do, Rob?
It wasn't me, actually, but a friend of mine. We were at, let's call it an unnamed place of worship on a Friday evening. The poor guy was going through an acrimonious separation, three kids under seven, and we had to go to a friend's place for dinner straight afterwards. Loaded the two girls in the car. He got all the way to Bel Air before he realised that the boy was not with him. So he had to go all the way back.
To where?
To Glenside.
Righto, so a little bit of a journey down the hill.
A bit of a journey, and the poor kid had been locked in the toilets in the dark.
Oh, no. Right.
Yeah. Poor little fella.
Yeah, so you reckon your daughter was a little bit distressed?
Yeah.
She was absolutely beside herself.
When your mind's on other things, it's
easy to
happen.
A dunny in the dark when you're a little kid, not a good place to be.
Let's go to Hallett Cove. G'day, Kathy.
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Are you Kathy? Guilty?
Yes. Well, yes and no. Sort of wasn't really
Can't
my
blame
fault,
anyone else.
Yeah. Can't blame anyone else, though. Yeah, I have to cough it.
Okay.
Was in Meyer once many, many years
Meyer.
Ago. Yeah, Meyer building, and we were looking through the nursery section. I was heavily pregnant with my third, had my second, and my oldest, who was three, was running around in the coat racks, the clothes racks, trying to play hide and seek. That was just so much fun, not.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, when he discovered he'd been found, he bolted for the open elevators and jumped into the elevators, and the door closed, and he took off. And I didn't know where he went, so it was quite frantic for a few minutes, running up and down the stairs trying to find him. But it all came good.
Good. Was he a bit worried when you found him?
No, he thought it was great.
Could have stayed there all day.
Oh, God. Let's go to Christie's Beach. How are you, Michael?
Good, boys.
What happened to you?
My son was 2 days out of coming out of hospital, and we went to the local shopping centre, and he was in the pram, and my wife was in the back seat of the car doing something, and I thought she was putting him in the in the car seat. So I folded the pram up and put it in the boot.
What?
Just went to shut the boot, and then my wife goes, "Where's my son? Where's our son?" And I go, "Well, you had him." She goes, "Well, she was worried that someone pinched him." I said, "Well, the only place he could be is in the boot." And there he was, happy as Larry in the sock.
Oh, no. Well, you folded him up.
Yeah, true story.
Oh, how did you feel?
Oh, not as bad as when I told the guys at Mitsubishi Motors when I was working there. It got around like wildfire.
Oh, God. These strange things can happen, can't they, Dits?
Yes. I've been told back growing up in the country, route. In fact, the great Russell Ebert told me this once. He said back in the day, they'd pile all the kids into the car, mum and dad, and go to the dance, and the kids had to just lay in the car outside all night.
And sleep.
Yeah, because back in those days, you know, no babysitters. Like, you live out on your own miles from nowhere. And they'd go to the town hall and dance. The kids would just lay across the back seat, the front seat, on the floor, and just wait for hours and hours and hours while mum and dad were inside.
We slept under tables many times, but not in the car too.
And you're still doing that, Roo, aren't you?
Yeah, done that. Yeah. So,
Hey, Roo, in a moment, we got the chance to go into the running for you too. This is this big rock world tour. Unbelievable.
Yep.
And then Josh Frydenberg's going to join us just to respond to Jay Weatherill today. Josh Frydenberg is the our federal energy minister.
Ruined Dits for Breakfast. 104.7 Triple M.
104.7 Adelaide's Triple M Ruined Dits for Breakfast. We heard from our Premier Jay Weatherill in the previous hour.
Yep.
Now, last night, and quite rightly, our Federal Minister for the Environment and Energy, Josh Frydenberg, was very outspoken about our decision here, or Jay Weatherill's decision here, to go it alone and build this plant for $550 million. Let's get him on. Minister, good morning.
Nice to be with you, boys.
Good. A lot of things to ask you about here. I want to take exception to one thing I heard you say last night, or I'd ask you to clarify it if possible, is that you said by South Australia opting to do this, the rest of the nation will have to pay higher prices for electricity. I find that a little bit alarming because that's exactly what we do here in South Australia. You know, at times we pay double what the rest of the nation pays. So why are we in the wrong?
The problems in South Australia have actually been caused by going it alone in the first place. As you know, you've had a 50% renewable energy target, and that has led to an over-reliance on wind and solar power. Now, for a long time, your Premier and your Energy Minister said there's no problems with your system, it's working well, the national electricity market is all fine and well and good. But the reality has been is that the experts have said there are real challenges posed by such a high reliance on wind and solar. Now you're going to a situation where you're going to spend $550 million of taxpayers' money to build a gas-fired power station, which will only be used in emergency situations and a whole range of other measures. Now, if your minister decides to get more power out of Victoria to help South Australia, and that is not the decision of the energy market operator, then that will mean less power in Victoria, and that means higher prices there. So we've got a system that is designed to get the lowest cost power to the various jurisdictions, and that is why it's centralised with the market operator, and that's why we shouldn't be tinkering it with individual states going it alone.
Josh, what's going to happen to South Australian power when Hazelwood plant in Victoria shuts down in March? Surely our power prices are going to go up higher, aren't they?
Absolutely right. And
how much do you think? Have you got any ideas? Is it going to be 8%, 10%, or something around those sort of numbers?
The Australian Energy Market Commission has pointed to prices going up by more than $70 on the average household bill. Now, this is a significant increase because you rely so heavily on Victoria. And what I'm concerned about is you guys going it alone is what happens if Victoria turns around tomorrow and says, hang on, we're not going to provide as much power from Victoria into South Australia. And so, therefore, where are you going to get that 25% of your power which you're currently relying on from the interconnector? And this is why having a national system is so important. We commissioned our chief scientist, Alan Finkel, to come up with a security review. And unfortunately, your government has now preempted the outcomes of that review, which are due in a very short period of time. And it's much better to be working on these things nationally than on a state-by-state basis.
Minister, just recently, as you know, we had a total blackout here in South Australia. And I guess you're pointing the finger at the fact that we tried to go it alone, so we've been caught short. But just recently there was a situation where someone has to play God here in this situation and flick a switch. There was a decision to be made between parts of New South Wales and parts of Victoria to be blacked out as well. and someone made the decision, I'll tell you what, we'll black out Victoria. That's what's happening with this national situation as well. So it's not ideal with what you've just explained either, is it?
Well, by the way, they didn't have blackouts in Victoria, and then in New South Wales, they didn't have households losing their power. Only in South Australia have you had this statewide blackout, and you've had this load shedding, which has been affecting households. So the situation in South Australia is much more vulnerable. Now, your Premier has said he's created a big experiment. And as you know, by relying so much on wind and solar, it's pushed out the coal-fired power station that you had in your state at Port Augusta. Even the unions in South Australia came out yesterday and said, with hindsight, South Australia should have kept Port Augusta going for longer. And we've got a Pelican Point, a gas-fired power station in South Australia, which has also been mothballed, but now your state is deciding to build one with taxpayers' money. It's all very confusing.
Just on that, look, without this is only a minor issue in this whole discussion, but there was a blackout in parts of Victoria, and I read about it, and it was on a day when it was 40-odd degrees, and they made a decision to blackout. I reckon it was Bendigo, parts of Ballarat, Shepparton, so we might agree to disagree on that. So I'm not making these things up as we chat.
It wasn't a total state blackout
like we had here, but someone decided to turn off parts of Victoria, and that happened.
It's not what is effectively called load shedding, where the energy market operator director. But you see, the challenges have been sometimes with the transmission systems, as opposed to definitive decisions by the energy market operator.
All right, now let's hear from. This is something our Premier said earlier on this morning.
Well, we're taking assertive action to stand up for South Australia, and their first instinct is to call on the lawyers to actually criticise it. We already have powers to intervene in an emergency. All we're doing is making it easier for us to intervene. So at the moment, I've got to get a cabinet meeting together, go off and see the governor, declare an emergency, and then my energy minister can direct the market. I'm just cutting through all that red tape and giving Tom the capacity to intervene. On February the 8th, what happened is that this national energy market, the one that Mr. Frydenberg is so fond of, chose to black out South Australians rather than turn on Pelican Point, a power station that was just sitting there. And I'm not going to have South Australians at the mercy of some boffin sitting over in the eastern states who don't give a bugger about South Australia.
Is he right in saying what happened on February 8th?
Well, he's actually wrong, because his own energy minister said in your parliament on the 29th of September that the system at a national level was designed by South Australia and has worked well for South Australia. And now there's a completely contradictory message. The point is, you can declare a state of emergency and therefore make the directions as the Premier wants. But if you allow that threshold to be lowered, as now that you're suggesting, we're going to see other states do the same potentially, and that will unwind the system. And because you rely so much on Victoria for power, you don't want Victoria to retaliate. But that's what you're inviting them to do.
Josh, can I ask you a quick one? Jay Weatherill said that with this big battery they're going to build, that it can store about enough power for an hour. He said they're going to be able to store it and sell it back into the grid. That's not going to happen, is it?
Well, batteries
isn't it used just for emergency?
Well, batteries can be sold into the grid. That is true. They can sell power back into the grid. And batteries are really coming down in price by about 50% every 5 years and doubling in capacity in that period. So batteries are the way of the future, and the Prime Minister's been talking about it. But just to put it in perspective for you guys, in September last year when you had the statewide blackout, you had 900 megawatts of power that was needed.
Yep.
You were deficient 900 megawatts. Now you're proposing to build a 100 megawatt battery. So it's not going to be the simple silver bullet and the solution to all your problems. I want South Australia to succeed. I want it to be a strong economy. I want the energy system to be stable. But I want South Australia to be at the table with the other states to get a whole national approach, as opposed to going it alone, which unfortunately created the problems in the first place.
All right. Thanks so much for explaining it this morning, our Federal Energy Minister, Josh Frydenberg. Thank you.
All the best, guys.
Sounds very simple, Roo, but a couple of people have tweeted in and said, why doesn't the federal government take over the whole thing and standardise pricing? Now, I don't know. It seems like a good question to ask,
It'd
really.
It'd be good for us, because we're paying twice as much as everyone else.
Yeah, we are.
Roo and Dits for breakfast
on 104.7 Triple M.
Roo, one of the commandments I grew up with is thou shalt drink beer. Yeah. It's as simple as that, really.
It's worked for a while.
Doesn't matter whether you're married, straight, gay, white, black, whatever. Mm. Just drink beer. It's as simple as that,
yeah,
I think.
It's worked very well for us.
And for some reason, the Coopers family and their brewery have been embroiled in this brouhaha, we
should
say.
Trying to have a bit of fun.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even that. Yeah. They were just supporting an organisation. They support all sorts
of people.
Okay,
I thought they were trying to have a bit of a laugh.
Anyway, let's the Bible Society put together a discussion, a debate, if you like.
Welcome to Keeping It Light, a place where we can have a light discussion about a very heavy topic. In this case, same-sex marriage, with two of the great opponents on this debate, Mr. Andrew Hastie and Mr. Tim Wilson, both members of Parliament. It's all made possible by the Bible Society, who have been keeping it light for 200 years.
There you go. So that's what it was about. Coopers somehow got involved, but Coopers get involved in a lot of things. They're involved at the Australian Tennis Open. They're involved in the supercars that were here in Adelaide as well.
Yep.
Basically, they're lending their brand to anyone that wants to have a beer and supporting them financially.
People were trying to say, don't drink their beer over in Melbourne and Sydney, weren't they, yesterday?
You're kidding.
No, that's what happened. Yeah. That's why they come out in a bit of damage control.
And look, I'm not an ambassador for Coopers or for their family here, by the way, but I just want to point out something, that this is an outstanding local South Australian family-owned brewery. Now, as family-owned brewers go, you would know only too well, they staved off a takeover bid going back, 10 years or so? Lion tried to take them over.
Did they ever?
And they dug their heels in. This mob have been around since the mid-1800s.
Could have taken the money.
They could have taken the money and run, and they've just grown and grown. When I was a kid, they were what you would call a boutique beer. Mm. Now, they are a major, major player.
Just in the eastern suburbs, right?
They were, at Leabrook. Now they're massive. They're at Regency Park. They've grown exponentially year in, year out, and they are serious now, and the pale ale is world famous. Now, am I doing an ad for Coopers? No, I'm not, but I'm just sticking up for a good South Australian company. And look, I reckon any bloke that's got a beer named after him is a bloody ripper bloke. Dr. Tim Cooper.
There's your dad out of a brewery.
Yeah, exactly. And we won't go on with the rest of that song, but do you kiss on first date? Does your dad own a brewery? Yeah. I've cleaned that up a little bit as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, Dr. Tim Cooper came out and defended the family yesterday.
On behalf of the Coopers board and senior staff, we're incredibly saddened by the impact our involvement with the Bible Society has had on our valued Coopers drinkers and our extended family. As a long-standing philanthropic company, Coopers Brewery has been passionate about supporting all aspects of our community and has actively and financially embraced many different organisations. Our company's guiding principles have centred around respect for others, and as such, the recent activity surrounding the video made by the Bible Society has conflicted with our core values. Coopers never intended to make light of such an important issue and would never and did not approve the making or release of the Bible Society video debate.
Coopers Brewery is and has always been supportive of diversity and encourages individualism. Our company supports marriage equality. Offence has been taken by our recent involvement, for which we are deeply sorry. We've consequently cancelled the release of our Bible Society commemorative cans and will be taking steps to show our further support for our community, including joining Marriage Equality Australia. Our company brews great beer that we're passionate about, and we warmly embrace all Australians. Thank you for your time and your continued support.
Now, that's Melanie Cooper, who's also on the board of directors. Tim's sister, Glenn, is also, Glenn Cooper's involved. And the only thing I'd say, move, and I think they've explained that perfectly well.
Yep.
The only thing I'd do, Dr. Tim and Melanie, this morning is when I check into any hotels from now on, replace the Bible next to my bed and put a bloody can of beer.
Put a couple of beers.
If you could put a pale ale there.
Put a sparkling
ale. Or a Dr. Tim's.
Just to put you to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that'd help us all. So replace the Gideons with a Coopers and we're all happy.
Yeah, no. Don't can't go wrong. I had a few Coopers at the Fringe the other night. Absolutely
there you go.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Well done to the Coopers family.
Get what you missed on Ruined Dits for breakfast on the catch up. For Adelaide Tools, selling tools, not toys. With 5 locations, Paraka, Lonsdale, St Mary's, Mile End and Gawler. AdelaideTools.com.au. Triple M.